This is Brownfield's Year in Review. 2019 was a year filled with trade tensions and uncertainties for the ag industry, although the final weeks of the year finally brought some relief on that front. Three issues dominated the discussions: the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, the bilateral trade negotiations with Japan and China. The least controversial of the three was the U.S.-Japan agreement, which received final approval from Japan in early December. Brownfield's Megan Grebner looks at that one.
University of Missouri livestock economist Scott Brown says the livestock sector will see relief almost immediately.
We'll talk about a tariff on U.S. beef going to Japan that currently sits at 38.5%, falling to around 26%. And in fact, I believe we get another reduction in that tariff come April 1 of 2020 as well. So we're going to get some pretty instantaneous help in terms of lower tariffs. This is potentially one of the reasons to get more bullish about where U.S. cattle prices can go in 2020. There is a long-term win here.
In early December, the agreement was approved by the Japanese parliament. U.S. Meat Export Federation economist Aaron Bohr says this effectively put the U.S. back on a level playing field in early 2020.
We have been at a significant and growing tariff disadvantage compared to our major competitors in the Japanese market, and we had already seen our market share erode, especially on the pork side, with these tariff disadvantages.
And it doesn't just mean being able to recover lost market share. U.S. producers are now in a position to capitalize on the growth potential in the Japanese market.
Japan has continued to import more beef and pork, and we see this trend continuing. There's still room to grow Japanese consumption, which U.S. red meat would help enable that growth with greater availability and affordability.
Rabo AgriFinance meat industry analyst Don Close calls the deal big news.
This year, because of the 12 to 13% tariff disadvantage that the U.S. has had to Australia and New Zealand, it has definitely had a negative impact on the volume of sales of U.S. product to Japan.
Now that tariff rates for the U.S. will mirror those of major competitors, the U.S. Meat Export Federation forecasts that U.S. beef and pork exports to Japan for 2020 to reach $2.3 billion for beef and $1.7 billion for pork. And by 2025, U.S. red meat exports to Japan will approach the $5 billion mark as consumption of U.S. red meat increases because of the greater access for Japanese consumers. Now, the deal is also expected to be positive for U.S. grain exports. It lowers tariffs on corn, some corn products, and sorghum to effectively zero. I'm Megan Grebner on Brownfield.
The other two trade issues, the USMCA and China, were much more controversial, as Brownfield's Ken Anderson reports.
Despite heavy pressure from ag groups to pass USMCA, the trade deal languished in the House of Representatives for most of the year. House Democrats, led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, insisted on changes to labor and environmental standards in the agreement. But some Republicans, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, accused Pelosi of playing politics with the agreement and wanting to deny President Trump a victory.
It includes changes that Democrats have themselves clamored for, and the administration has bent over backwards to accommodate their concerns. But here we are, a year after all three countries announced the deal, and the Democrats' heel-dragging continues.
Nebraska ag leaders expressed their frustration at a Husker Harvest Days news conference in September.
The passage of USMCA can't be looked at as a win for the president versus a defeat for the administration. It has to be looked at as a win for the American people.
Finally, after several weeks of back and forth between the Democrats, the Trump administration, and officials from Mexico and Canada, Pelosi announced they were satisfied with the agreement.
It is infinitely better than what was initially proposed by the administration.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said USMCA is important to both agriculture and the U.S. economy.
Access to Canada's dairy market and both poultry and eggs, wheat grading systems in the north, but also the certainty of our two best trading partners and our closest neighbors, Canada and Mexico, for the foreseeable future.
The House approved the agreement in mid-December. The Senate's expected to vote on it in January. The ongoing trade war with China was another major issue in 2019, some comparing it to a roller coaster ride with hopeful news one day followed by discouraging news the next. Many ag groups and farmers continued to support Trump's efforts to fix trade issues with China, but others, like Brian Keel of Farmers for Free Trade, were critical.
Trade war with China is just killing us. It is causing farm bankruptcies to go up. It's really squeezing farmers.
The trade war was especially frustrating for pork producers. NPPC's Nick Giordano said China's difficulties with African swine fever was creating an unprecedented sales opportunity for U.S. producers.
Our folks understand the complexity of the issues of the negotiation with China, but it's tough for them because they've really been hurt by trade retaliation, and now they see an opportunity of a lifetime.
Finally, in early December, some good news, an announcement that the two sides had agreed on a Phase 1 trade deal. Ag groups and farmers reacted with cautious optimism. The agreement calls for China to purchase $40 to $50 billion of ag products from the U.S. over each of the next 2 years. Officials say it will also eliminate some of China's non-tariff agricultural trade barriers. And officials say it will be finalized in early 2020. For Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson, Brownfield.
To drill this down even further, we let Mark Dorenkamp take this to a state level.
Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp says there's not much certainty in agriculture right now.
Poor weather, low prices, trade uncertainty, we've got to increase demand.
Minnesota Farmers Union President Gary Wordish tells Brownfield, even with a trade deal, he's worried the China market will never be what it once was.
China's dug in their heels. They've made agreements with Brazil, for example, to buy more soybeans for them to help, frankly, to help invest in that country, to help them raise more soybeans and invest in their infrastructure. So those, even if we get China settled tomorrow, we're going to be dealing with that. We'll get some of it back, but it'll never be back 100% like we had it. The USMCA, you know, the one thing you got to remember, we're still operating under the previous NAFTA. There's a lot of hype about the USMCA, how it's going to be the greatest trade deal ever, you know, really going to move. But for agriculture, it helps, but it's really not that much of an improvement over NAFTA.
Wordish and Papp both made these comments before the most recent news on USMCA and China. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
2019 was extremely challenging for many farmers, and it continued the downturn in commodity prices that's lasted for more than a half decade. As Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp reports, working capital has eroded to the point that some producers can't get financing.
Minnesota West Community and Technical College Dean of Agriculture and Business Paul Lanoux says earlier this year he worked with some young farmers turned away by traditional lenders.
They've looked for banks, and their banks aren't giving them choices. I had one that was at 15%, pretty much a credit card, is what he was putting all of his input costs on because he couldn't attain it anywhere else.
Lanoux, who also farms, tells Brownfield that is not feasible long term.
He deemed it as a short-term punt, but at the end it cost him so much money and interest that it just isn't justifiable. His net farm profit can't even make up for the interest payment.
Lanoux says with the decrease in working capital and less available cash, farmers who can't restructure debt are forced into mediation or even bankruptcy. It's not surprising then that Chapter 12 bankruptcies are on the increase. But Farmer Mac ag economist Jackson Takish says that statistic needs to be put into perspective.
Although the percentages sound alarming, so you hear numbers like 25% increase, they're still very small. So right now we're experiencing about 2.7 bankruptcies per 10,000 farms. And to put that into perspective, the last 10 years we've averaged 2. So we've seen an increase of less than 1 farm per 10,000 in entering bankruptcy.
Total Chapter 12 bankruptcies are up about 125 over last year. And while it's very difficult for the farmers and ag lenders involved, Takish says it's still a fairly small number overall. The USDA is estimating 2019 net farm income to be up more than 10% from last year at $93 billion. But USDA chief economist Rob Johansson says nearly a quarter of that number will come from direct government payments.
About $22.4 billion, up 64% from last year.
Those government payments include market facilitation program and disaster aid payments. Crop insurance indemnities, minus what farmers paid for the policies, are at $6.5 billion, the highest level since 2013. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
2019 had its bright spots. One of the few was the stable price of land. Brownfield's Ken Anderson reports.
There was very little fluctuation in Midwest farmland prices in 2019, despite continued weakness in commodity prices and considerable trade uncertainty. Analysts attribute the stability in land values to favorable interest rates, good yields in most areas, market facilitation program payments, which helped bolster farm incomes, and limited land supply. Bob Campbell is with Omaha-based Farm Credit Services of America.
there's been a pretty equal supply and demand ratio for real estate. We haven't had an oversupply of land that hit the market, and there's been plenty of demand for whatever has hit the market.
Randy Dickhoot with Farmers National Company agrees. He says the demand for farmland remains strong.
There is that demand. A good quality farm only comes up for sale once every 3-4 generations, and the neighbors are there to buy it. There's still capital in the farmers' hands in most cases that has been saved, that they're purchasing that good land that comes up for sale.
Nathan Kaufman, an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, agrees with those assessments but adds a word of caution.
There has been sufficient demand for land at a time when there still has just not been a lot of land being sold. If that environment were to change and for whatever reason we were to start seeing more land being put onto the market, then, you know, we maybe question whether or not the demand that is there is strong enough to keep prices at the level that they're at.
Kenny Shum with Illinois-based Murray Wise Associates also wonders if there will be more farmland coming onto the market in 2020.
We may see more bankruptcies come next year for folks that had a rough year this year, and capital possibly becoming a little bit tighter. You know, the lenders are really going to start taking a harder look, I think, over the next 12 to 18 months.
As for cash rents heading into the new year, Dick Hoot with Farmers National Company says they're also holding pretty steady.
I don't think we'll see a lot of change. We haven't so far in what we've negotiated and worked out, and some rental bids. You know, farmers are still willing to have the right operation to bid up for the land.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson.
Thinking back to the early part of the year, 2019 began in the midst of a government shutdown. As Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp reports, it had a major impact on agriculture.
The longest government shutdown in U.S. history began December 22, 2018, and ended January 25, 2019. Speaking to Brownfield toward the end of the shutdown, then Minnesota Soybean Growers Association President Michael Pettifish said having USDA agencies shuttered hurt the bottom line of farmers.
Both for receiving CCC loans and putting grain under loan, for MFP sign-up and monies and payments, but also I've heard reports of farmers wanting to remove loans from CCC, in other words, haul them in this month because of a good basis or something, so they're neither able to put them on if they haven't or take them off if they already have, and it's really handcuffing some farmers' abilities to raise capital if the banks maybe squeeze them a little bit as we approach rent season and input season and spring. May need to sell some grain to raise capital, and they're not able to do so right now.
Some USDA crop reports scheduled to be released during the shutdown were delayed, including the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, crop production reports, grain stocks, and rice stocks. USDA Chief Economist Rob Johansson explained.
They do take some time to put together and complete the analysis and compile those reports, and so we need to have our staff in the office in order to do that. At this time, we're going to delay those, and we will be putting them out once funding becomes available and we can bring staff in.
There was also concern the shutdown could impede rolling out the newly minted 2018 Farm Bill. But American Farm Bureau Chief Economist John Newton downplayed the impact.
FSA staff and officials across the country will, once they get back to work, will have to figure out and establish some timelines for when farmers will have to make some of those key program elections in that new Farm Bill.
In total, the 36-day partial shutdown of the federal government tossed 350,000 federal workers out of their offices and left 800,000 people without paychecks for a month. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
Dairy farmers have been looking at too many years of market pressure. Consequently, many are exiting the business altogether rather than have to face continued financial trouble in the future. Brownfield's Nicole Heslop, who was raised in the dairy business, identifies closely with dairy producers who have suffered through this slide in the dairy economy.
After 5 years of continued depressed prices for dairy farmers, economists expected 2019 to be the year for a turnaround.
Farms are exiting. We know that at an increased rate. People getting discouraged about the prospect of dairy industry. We see cow values really low, I mean, almost at cull cow prices.
In January, University of Wisconsin's Mark Stevenson called for a gentle improvement in prices. Class 3 prices made nearly a $6 recovery by December. but that upswing didn't come without the loss of more farms. Brownfield's Larry Lee has more.
The dairy industry continued to see fewer independent dairy farms, but very little change in the number of cows milked. After losing 691 licensed dairy farms in 2018, Wisconsin lost 773 more farms in 2019, and figures are not in for December yet. Last month, Minnesota Milk Director Lucas Schulstrom told Brownfield the Gopher State is experiencing similar trends.
October 1 to October 1, we lost 13.1% of dairies in Minnesota.
And USDA's Ty Kalla says it's the same story in Michigan as shown by the last two ag census reports.
The census does show that the number of milk cows actually increased 17% to 442,000, although we did see a pretty decrease in the number of milk cows operations, 251 operations less than we had in 2012.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Larry Lee.
In the spring, two farm organizations launched a nationwide initiative to seek a change in how dairy farmers are paid for milk. The National Farmers Union and National Farmers Organization hosted Dairying Together, a series of meetings designed to get farmers talking about the way milk is priced. Bobby Wilson with Wisconsin Farmers Union told Brownfield,
"We simply can't accept the status quo. We can't keep going down the road that we're going down now, or the traditional family dairy farm will all but disappear from the American landscape."
In the second half of the year, USDA finally rolled out a new dairy margin coverage program, authorized by the 2018 Farm Bill. Mid-Michigan farmer Ken Nobis told Brownfield he wished the changes in the program had been available in the last farm bill.
"If we'd had this in place in the 2014 farm bill, we wouldn't have nearly as many producers in the financial condition they're in today."
More than 22,000 producers enrolled and have paid more than $300 million to farmers just in 2019. Rabo Agri Finance dairy analyst Ben Lane told Brownfield he's optimistic about the dairy outlook for the fourth quarter and the start of 2020.
"In the U.S. and across the world, you're seeing some constraints that are keeping people from really being able to expand in a big way. So I think that seeing that constraint is still going to help support prices going into the first half of next year."
He says even if farms would like to expand financially, they're not able to do so. And if they could, they might not find a home for that milk. Demand for cheese and slowly improving trade also add to a positive outlook ahead. I'm Nicole Heslop with Brownfield.
What's keeping livestock producers up at night? Hog farmers' greatest fear might be a dreaded pig disease. Cattle feeders, meanwhile, cringe at fake meat. More on those when we come back. This is 2019, the Year in Review on Brownfield.